This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM.
Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning.
Good Sunday to you, and happy May. It's good to be in May, finally.
It's your birthday month.
It's my birthday month. Things are turning green. There's all kinds of activity, tourists, visitors. There's a lot of action going on in the River City, in the Garden City.
The Garden City.
Everything's up to date in the Garden City, you know, and we have a sort of a splurge of activities in the manufacturing area. And one of those people is joining us today, Mallory Otariano, who we first met when it was Kind Apparel.
Yep.
And then it metamorphosized into your apparel. And now she's manufacturing right here, you know, in our hometown, which is really exciting because, you know, manufacturing is a thing that's hard to get going and hard to sustain. And she's bringing it back here.
Yeah, I believe this is the third time we've spoken to Mallory.
Yes, it is. And every time there's something new going on there, and it's good to talk to an entrepreneur who is building a business here and is trying to do as much of it as possible in Missoula. And so it's exciting to hear about her new manufacturing plans.
Exactly. And she'll be bringing a special guest, Sarah, who's her head of manufacturing and production, to join her. And we're going to really dig in deep and talk about what that looks like, because that is a real process to manufacture clothing and to actually, you know, you're still piecing parts together from many different, you know, suppliers, if you will.
Right.
But they're actually sewing and, you know, finalizing the apparel right here.
Well, what's exciting about that is if you look at the label of almost everything hanging in your closet, it's made somewhere else. Indonesia,
right.
Malaysia, China, Vietnam. I got every country in the world. I should put a flag in the map of every country that a piece of clothing comes from. And here we have something that's going to be made in Missoula, Montana.
Totally agreed. So I'm excited to talk to Mallory again.
Good.
All right. When we come back, our guest will be the gals from Ewer. Back after this. Arnie, we are back with our guests, Mallory Otariano and Sarah Cabral.
That's pretty close.
That's
right. Cabral.
Yeah,
so,
it.
Sarah, Mallory, it's good to see you. Mallory, we've had on several times. Mallory first came on, it was in the precursor days of Kind Apparel, and then that metamorphosized into your apparel. And the last time you were on, you were talking about trying to create manufacturing capability here in Montana. And apparently that's happened. So for our listeners who have not followed the genesis of your company, why don't you give them a little bit of a background of how you got to where we are today?
Yeah, totally. Well, thanks for having us. I started Ewer with a $100 sewing machine in my parents' basement. I was 22, and I bought it on eBay, and I just started sewing clothes and selling them on the internet, on Etsy. And that was 11 years ago, and things have changed a ton, but that momentum just kind of kept rolling and rolling, and I've worked with probably a dozen U.S.-based factories at this point, and what I've learned over the last 12-ish years is that nobody's going to care about your product as much as you do. So we've had so many crazy situations with production that has motivated me to bring production back in-house. And in 2021, ran a really successful crowdfunding campaign to raise $100,000 to secure a deposit on a building I was going to purchase to start a factory that we were going to call the Universe. And as most things go, it didn't exactly happen as planned, and I didn't buy that building. But we did get in a wonderful rented space, and now, almost 2 years later, we have Sarah on our team, and we have a small team of sewers, and we are making about 30% of our product in-house, and we hopefully have just won an auction for some other machines that would allow us to bring 100% in-house.
Wow.
And yeah, we just have a ton of fun. We're like,
what kind of machines?
Something called a flat lock. A couple of those. That's like the really flat, sporty looking stitch on leggings. And then a special kind of serger to attach the collars of shirts. And then we were getting another press to put tags into things, but I don't think we got that.
So how did the COVID pandemic affect your decision-making and your pathway to where you are now?
I'm glad you asked that, Ernie, because that was the impetus. I went 7 months with no product because my supply chain completely shut down and fell apart. And after rebuilding it several times, it just had no solidity at all. And I realized then that it was always going to be this constant battle to be a priority at a factory as a small brand, unless I did it myself. So I really struggled through 2020. I had a small team of people that no longer worked for me by the end of the year. I didn't have an office anymore. I worked out of my basement and just kind of waited for factories to open up and try to sell stuff again.
But you controlled your costs and your expense considerably.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And you have always had loyal customers. So how did you interface with them during this period when they wanted things and you couldn't provide them things?
I just got on Instagram and I started talking about supply chains because until 2020, I think it's pretty safe to say that nobody really gave a crap about supply chains at all. No one knew what they were. And then all of a sudden, we were really affected by them when things that we wanted didn't show up. And then everybody understood them. So I just started talking about how stuff was made and what I was going through as a small brand and the realities of the apparel industry and manufacturing, and really resonated with people. And they really gravitated towards the story. And when I did a product, they were there to support it.
Well, you bring up a very important and interesting point in the manufacturing world, which is for decades now, manufacturing has gone abroad because it was cheaper and the transportation costs were, you know, were pretty good and you could get it made overseas much less than you could ever make it here. And then COVID comes along and you realize it doesn't matter how cheap it is. If you can't get it, you can't get it. And that not only reformed your thinking about how to run a business, but other industries and other businesses came to the same realization. We've had other guests on the show have talked about how to, you know, bring stuff here. You know, the folks that do the e-bikes and other folks. You just can't rely, particularly if you have a customer base that's waiting for product, on this, you know, I don't know even how you want to describe it, but this dysfunctional supply chain that exists, and COVID just exacerbated all of the weaknesses in that supply chain. And so now you're manufacturing here and you have a head of manufacturing, Sarah.
Yes.
So Sarah,
yes.
You're from Brazil. You studied in Seattle. What's your background to lend your expertise here to your, tell me what you've done before.
Thanks for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here. So my background is, I started sewing when I was 5 years old. I've been in love with fashion since I'm a child, sewing Barbies and all that. But when I came to the U.S., it was just to stay 1 year and learn English. I was in Seattle. I found this apparel program. I was like, well, that sounds fun. It hits the credit for my visa. I'll do that. And I fell in love and finished the program. And on that program, it's design and development. I learned all about pattern making, all you need to know to make clothes, from design concept to finished product. And I've been looking for a company that has the same values as I do in terms of sustainability and care about who made your clothes. And that's where Yura came and fit right in with what I was looking for.
With your beliefs.
Yeah.
Can we take a step back real quickly? When you were 5 years old, so who was your role model? Who was somebody who you emulated to encourage you to do that?
Thanks for asking that. That's my grandma. She used to teach cut and sew for the city.
Uh-huh.
And my mom learned from her.
Right.
And that's where I came to see my mom sewing. My mom, it's a really talented and beautiful sewing.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so I started sewing in a real sewing machine, my mom's sewing machine. And then Santa once gave me a sewing machine, and I was like, Mom, I don't know what Santa was thinking about it, but this doesn't work. It's a toy. So, yeah.
How cool is that, though, that from such a young age that you were interested in this? Mallory, you couldn't have recruited somebody with more dedication and passion for their field.
How'd you find her?
This is wonderful.
We are
so
lucky to have Sarah.
How did you find Sarah?
We found each other on LinkedIn. I posted this job.
Some of those things happen.
Yeah, it was like the first kind of big hire of my small company, and it felt super exciting. And we had like almost 100 people apply to the job. And
really?
Yeah, from all over the world. And I realized pretty quickly I was going to have to be somebody from not Missoula.
Best.
And, yeah. Yep.
You can't even get someone in Missoula to do repair of clothes, to do seamstress type work. I mean, you can't even find people to do that.
You're so
it's
right.
It's a dying art.
100% yes. Agree. But wait a minute. So Sarah started in Seattle.
No, she came here. This was always going to be an in-person. I feel really strong in that product, tangible product. You have
so you
to
moved
there.
Her here?
Well, she drove herself across the passes
with all my stuff.
It's a little bit different
was
here.
Was that nerve-wracking? Were you nervous?
No. It's like, I don't know. I've been moving a lot my whole life. I lived in so many cities. So, like, moving, it's not new for me. So I was just ready to move to something new.
Do you have relatives here in the States?
I do have an aunt in Boston and a cousin in Houston. But that's it. My family, my mom, my siblings, my parents are all in Brazil.
And what do they think about you living in Missoula, Montana? They probably had to get an atlas out, right, and try to figure out where the heck this is, right?
Missoula.
Yeah, I had to say
it. I didn't know how to say it.
I told my parents over the phone, yeah, I got the job in Missoula. I'm moving there. And they're like, can you spell that? Let me Google.
It's very confusing watching the Celtics games these days because the coach's last name is Missoula.
But it's not spelled the same.
I know, it's not spelled the same.
But it is. It is funny when you hear that on
the
air.
It's like you hear Missoula. Wait a minute, Sarah. So this. Give us the year. When did you move here? When did this all kind of transpire?
I moved here end of January. It was
of this year,
2023.
So you're
a
new Missoulian.
I am new Missoula.
Missoulian.
And it was really cold and from the tropical. So it was fine. I learned how to drive
drier.
On ice and
Mallory didn't tell you that summer is only about 4 weeks and it comes and goes before you know it.
She got herself a Subaru and landed here on a sub-zero day, and she fit right in. Right. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And have you been going to breweries on your off time? Like, have you been experiencing the whole Missoula?
So the program that you went to at community college, did they offer anything like that back in your state in Brazil? Was there any kind of similar program that you could have taken back home?
So this program, it's actually not – it's a really technical program because a lot of fashion schools, they teach you the beautiful art of
designing.
And they teach you all the technical hard skills. And there's not a lot even in the country. I think there's like five of these type of technical schools that
– Wow, that's pretty cool.
That teaches from all stages of –
Right,
creating
the process.
So I want to talk a little about the process between the two of you and the company. I know from past visits with Mallory that she's the creative impetus behind everything. You have these ideas about fashion and design and how you come up with your clothing lines and mixing materials and fabrics and all that sort of stuff. How do you translate that to the manufacturing part of things? How does that creative process work?
Sarah does a lot of construction and trial and error. Like, she's down at the machines all day long. Just kind of – I'll come up with an idea and kind of put it on paper or on a computer screen. And then Sarah breaks that all apart and figures out – she makes our patterns. So she is actually determining exactly what pieces of fabric we're cutting and how things are getting sewn together. And so she basically takes that idea and figures out – what all the sequence of events are that have to happen in order to make it, and figures out what machines we're going to use, makes suggestions about how we can tweak different design elements to make it faster or cheaper
So you guys are really like a creative duo.
Yeah. And Sarah's first like full solo design is about to hit our site at the end of the summer, which is really exciting.
If Mallory was the songwriter to the songs, you're actually the arranger. Right, you're helping arrange the songs and presenting them to the,
and then writing new lyrics. Writing
wow!
Yeah.
So she is the Lennon to your McCartney.
Totally.
How cool is that?
It's super cool. Sarah has all the. I don't know anything about technical design. Like, I didn't.
You shouldn't
have
to.
Self-taught, and Sarah knows exactly like how to.
How
best
cool is this?
Yeah, it's
this
so
is like
awesome.
You know what I like in this too. I don't know if you saw recently, but Rick Rubin, the great hip hop producer, not even just hip hop, because he did Johnny Cash, Run DMC, the Beastie Boys, everybody's famous. You know what he said when someone said they asked him the question, like, why are you such a successful music producer? What do you do? And he goes, do you know how to even read music? He goes, I don't know how to play an instrument, read music, or even understand how – I don't even understand that process. He goes, I don't understand how the sauce is made. I know what I like and what my ears tell me. And that instinct has what has guided me for the past almost 40 years.
Did he even do Johnny Cash?
He did Johnny Cash's – a bunch of his records. Yeah, but the point is that he doesn't need to know the technical aspect to be a producer, right? He's not an engineer. He's not running a lot. So that's kind of like you. You're the Rick Rubin of apparel. You don't have to know, but you've taught yourself stuff. But really, you rely on people to do that, which is great. Some of the best products come from that type of collaboration.
Sarah's enabled us to bring so many more technical things to life, too.
Totally.
So
where are you now? You have this manufacturing facility. You have new staff and new support. You have this creative process going. What about the sales end of the business? Where are things at the moment?
We grew a lot last year, and we're on track to continue to grow this year, which is super exciting. As a small team, we all wear a ton of hats, and I am the only person in charge of sales and marketing. So I'm pretty much responsible for every dollar that comes in, and this has been a little bit of a pivot to bring on a team and explore management and do a whole new thing. So that is we have such a loyal customer base that things keep chugging along. But it's definitely something that I have base, to pivot though, right? back to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because for this type of product, this conversion-based product where they build these sales funnels, right, you are acquiring a bunch of new, newer, interested people.
Totally.
And your job is to kind of move them through the funnel so that they convert and they buy something, right? Because once they buy something, that's just another convert. So how does word of mouth work with like social media fit? So how does that fit into your marketing plans? Because you're very good, and we've talked about this offline, creating content and creating stories, storytelling. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, we had such an adventure in content last year. We're a team of three until the end of the year, and we're now a multi-million-dollar business, which is exciting, and we've done zero paid ads to get there. So it's all amazing through content creation. And I make the majority of the content, but I'll look down from my office and Sarah's out there with her tripod and her phone filming her process. So we're just sharing the behind-the-scenes stories of everything, and it's been the tangent of our social media has really become education on how stuff is made and teaching people that. And started exploring TikTok last year and had a couple of viral videos that landed us in some really strategic press and got a feature in BuzzFeed. And that was really just like an amazing infusion of traffic and customers.
Which is incredible. And how often are you posting and doing content? Daily?
Well, I should be, but that's content creation and video creation has been one thing that's taken a backseat the past couple months for me because I just don't really have a ton of time. But
how and where, if anywhere, does brick and mortar stores play a role in what you're envisioning for the future?
Sadly, because it's been a pleasant experience. Wholesale has become a smaller and smaller and smaller channel for us. For 2023, our wholesale is dropped by hundreds of percents. We have less than 10 stores that carry our stuff, but it's always been a small percentage. We've always been about 80% direct consumer, 20% wholesale. And the outdoor industry of small brick and mortar outdoor specialty stores are just so many of our stores have gone out of business or owners have retired. And it's not a really fantastic place for us to put our efforts anymore.
Arnie, the nicest thing happened during COVID. Everybody figured out how to shop from their home, and e-commerce exploded, and it's not going back. I mean, it's only you're riding the wave of that important trend.
And you, of course, had to deal with making it easy for people who have never felt or worn your product to be able to return it, because people guess their sizes most of the time. And I know everybody tries to have a hands-on way, to make sure that what you buy, when I buy a shirt or something online from a new company, they want you to measure yourself and do all these sorts of things. But it doesn't always work.
Right.
And sometimes people who are vain, think that they're
they get two sizes.
12, but they get a 10 because they're hoping that maybe they will fit into it.
I don't know about you, Arnie, but when I'm ordering, I usually order two sizes, medium and large. And now you, Arnie's dropped 35 pounds in the past.
I know.
Isn't that amazing?
It's
in the last
amazing.
4 months?
Congrats,
5 months?
Yeah.
So he's now on – he's now – I'm not going to tell you size, but he's going down in size.
All new clothes.
Yeah. Yes.
We do something that's kind of fun for buying online, which other brands have started to do too, is we create sizing videos. So we get a whole bunch of bodies in all the sizes that we make, and we ask people to share their height
that's
and their
cool.
weight.
And you show them a video
and
of somebody
video
that's close
spinning
to
around. Yeah, so that you might see somebody who looks like you in these videos. And we've the standard e-commerce apparel return rate is between 15 and 30%.
Right.
Our return rate is under 5%.
That's fantastic. I was going
to
ask you that, and that's
videos.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
The video does make sense, and I've seen that on a couple of sites, and I'm drawn to those sites because you can find
right.
somebody, you know, they say, well, yeah, you know, he has a belly like I have a belly.
Right. Everyone's shaped differently.
Right, exactly.
I tell my wife that.
And particularly with the fabrics they're using now, they're much more clingy fabrics than there used to be. And so some people who don't like to see all of their, you know, curves and shapes.
Right, but that's who we are.
I mean, that's the way
we
it's
are
been.
People. We are individuals.
Right.
So that's why it's
are.
Called Your.
That's so true.
Talk about that. So how did the name, when did the name change happen? Because
the name change happened in 2020.
Right.
Kind Apparel was the thing I started in my parents' basement
right.
when I was out of college. It was just not representative of what we were doing at the time or where I wanted to go. And I hated having apparel after my name. I just felt like that was so limiting because now we do so many things beyond apparel. We have events and roller skating parties, and we had a factory tour. We're going to have a plant swap. And so Your, as one singular word, allows us to do so many things. And the philosophy behind the brand has always been to express your individuality. That's why I personally started making clothes, because I wanted things I couldn't find. So the idea of Your is more you. And so we create tools to allow you right. to express your full individuality and be the most
through
you.
Clothing.
And yeah.
And while, as I recall, most of your clothing is female-oriented, you know, as I watch Timothy Chalamet and Jared Leto at the Met
yeah.
ball dressing in feathers and, you know, is there now a gender mix that's happening for some of your clothing?
Totally. Yes, yeah. absolutely. We have a whole range of genders buy and wear our things. It's really yeah. just up to you as the person what your level of experimentation can be. We have
You know, I want to go to Sarah for a second. So just because I want to get back to her for a second, but I do have another question for you around that. So when you kind of came here in January and started to establish your life and establish your working with Mallory.
Yeah.
And this really is your first big job too, right? This is not like, this is your first big job. So this is a big gamble.
It is.
So how is that, how do you feel now 5 months in, you know?
I feel, let's see, the word that would best describe would be accomplished, because I was like really chasing this. I did work before in another brand, a Seattle-based brand.
Oh, okay.
But it was the place I did internship, and now it's actually the time that I have more responsibility and I'm full-time employed.
Well, you're being modest, because I was with Sarah the other night at Mallory had a party, kind of. Not a party, but like an open house, right? And myself and Grant Keir, our good friend Grant with the MEP, were talking to Sarah about the manufacturing process and the different machinery and the different patterns and that. And she took us through this, and I swear to God, it was the first time someone's ever explained how things are made. Like, I don't even, and I'm telling you,
from
you're really good
to
at that.
Finish.
Yeah, from start to finish.
Like, when does the color go in?
Well, that, but like, right, because Mallory, they're getting all of their materials from other places, correct? Right now. But eventually, who knows, right?
Who knows?
Yeah. Right? But Sarah was describing that to me and to Grant, Arnie, and it made sense to me, like I had never thought about it. And it was just very, you were very methodical about explaining it, but it was not boring. Like, I got it. So how did you learn that?
Because I'm so excited about clothing, like I can make it sound exciting.
I have a prediction.
What's that?
I think that they're going to have, at some point, a retail store in Missoula. That's my prediction.
They had at one point.
I know, but now that Revolver is open for men. Have you been at Revolver?
Oh, yes. I've not been there.
Yeah, the
it's a great store.
Your products compete at that level. I mean, they have shirts for men's shirts for $125. This is not competing with Kohl's or Dillard's or it is, and there's a market here for that. And your products are not products that you would find at a place like Kohl's or at Target or any of those. You're a higher class.
That's a great point, actually, Mallory. Is that, do you ever envision that being kind of part of the brand story, is having like not a pop-up store, but having different retail presentations of viewer in key markets and / demographics, like a Boulder or like a Bozeman?
Well, I think Revolver is a good example because they're in Bend, Bozeman here in Portland, and those have a certain kind of vibe to them.
Oh, they do.
You know, and we now have I was in the mall the other day and walked past Lululemon, and it was packed. And
thank
Lululemon
God.
Lululemon is not inexpensive, casual.
Is it a full store now, or is it still pop-up?
It's a full store.
Oh,
full
good.
Store, there was like 20 people. The market here is maturing in terms of its taste for unique items.
You're right.
And price point. I remember when I first started doing this, I was selling at farmers markets and little festivals, like music festivals outside. And I think I was selling skirts for like $40 or something. And people would be like, oh my gosh, that's so expensive.
Oh, I know.
Now our skirts are $100.
Well, you walk into Shields.
And nobody thinks they're crazy.
You walk into Shields. I was just in Shields and looking at shirts hanging. There were $108, $118 in Shields for a men's,
You're buying quality.
Maine and Meissen or Meissen and Maine or whatever. They're $120.
Yeah, you're
for
buying
a shirt.
Quality. You're buying.
So there may be in the future, that's my crystal ball.
Yeah.
A store here that would be a draw for people.
Let's do a quick ID. Our guests are both Sarah and Mallory from Ewer, here, born, bred, and here in Missoula, Montana. Real quick, so what are next steps now with the fact that you brought production in-house and design in-house? You did say that some of your materials come from other suppliers, but is that part of the roadmap, is to bring that ultimately in-house, or does that require a whole different footprint?
That's a whole different footprint. But we do have plans to build our supply chain more deeply in Missoula. There's a sublimation printing company locally called Western Sensibility, and the majority of our fabrics are sublimated. That's something.
What does that mean?
That is a printing process, essentially, where ink gets fused onto fabric through a gas exchange. So it actually becomes part of the fabric. It's not technically printing, but that's an easy way to describe
it. That's why I was asking about when the color gets in.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
Yeah. So we plan to build that out, but we're really focused on building our own production. We want to be able to bring 100% of production in-house. And now
that's
we're just
first.
That's first, yeah. We have some hurdles along the way, but we're about to be able to acquire the equipment that would allow us to do that. We just have to figure out the staffing piece.
What's been the biggest surprise so far over this, the journey of the last couple of years, that after you made the decision to go, local and do this? What's been the biggest surprise?
I kind of have two.
Okay.
Like the last 3 years has been, maybe it's not really much of a surprise, but the most heartwarming experience is that community really has so much power to change the world and change people's lives, and that clothes are not frivolous whatsoever. They really do change people's lives, and that's something that I didn't necessarily believe when I first started this. So that's been a really cool and surprising thing. And then since we've been making stuff in-house, I think the most surprising thing has been that the simplest things to make, which is what we brought in-house first, t-shirts, we thought that'd be really simple and easy. Those are actually not simple at all. And
how come?
They have so many steps involved in them. And there are just, t-shirts are ubiquitous. You can't charge $200 for a t-shirt. So you kind of have to work within the rest of the market, but it's slow and complicated to make.
Right. It's interesting you mentioned about clothes affect and change and have all kinds of meaning beyond just, putting something on so you can walk outside. I was seeing a piece about, our friend at Facebook and some of the other companies where they're always wear gray t-shirts. They're $400 Italian t-shirts, and he's got 50 of them.
Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah, Mark wears one of those every day. I remember working in the delinquency prevention area and taking a young teenage boy to buy his first clothes that were his clothes, his own clothes that were not hand-me-downs from the family or from Goodwill or from somewhere else, and how proud they became to have something that was theirs and something that they participated in picking out rather than just being given to them and this is what you got to wear. So it has a lot of emotional engagement with folks.
Sure. How did you figure that out? Like what?
I always used clothes to express. Style was always a way that I expressed myself. I was always wearing weird things, and that's been a piece of me since I was a tiny kid. And then when I went to college, I studied architecture, and I always wanted to be an artist, but I thought that was like pretty applied, and I could get a good job. And then I left school thinking, I got to do something meaningful, like I'll be a teacher or do green building, something that helps the planet. Clothes don't help anything. Like those are so frivolous. What a dumb career. And then as I started into it, as I started to make things that people would buy and wear for experiences and reach out to tell me the amazing life events that they had experienced in clothes, I realized that these really, like, they empower people to do really great things.
Right. And
definitely.
And the individuality and creativity. No matter how creative an individual you ever want to be, you're never going to end up looking like Jared Leto at the Met Gala. Did you mm-hmm. see the photo of him with the big
cat hat?
Big cat head next to his head, dressed like
Anne Hathaway. He surprised her carpet.
It was surprising anybody to be dressed like that.
Do you think Missoula should have its own fashion show? Because you do have a lot of local creators.
So fun. That's something we've talked about a little bit, like a fashion week. Fashion week is this huge experience
in
New York and in Europe, and these designers that pop up fashion shows everywhere. And there are so many creative people in this city that'd be really awesome.
We should have a runway show of some sort here.
We can do that. They used to have a fashion show as part of Blue Mountain Clinic at the old Wilma.
It was made out of trash, right?
Yeah.
Did you
great.
Ever do one at Madison Square Garden? Were they ever a fashion show there?
No, but I was at the fashion. So I used to go to Fashion Week at Bryant Park.
Yeah,
and my friend used to had a photo studio there. So it was great. It was fun. But it was it's a bunch of characters too.
Your KGVO and you're doing a Missoula fashion night. You know, runway
KGVO?
Show.
KGVO. That may not be the brand we want to pair with your.
No. But one of the
Bongino and
Dan Bongino,
Bongino and Crop
and
Top
and Cathead.
Right. Well, Sarah, back to you for a second because you are the newest member of Viewer here in Missoula. When you're not doing work with Mallory, what are you doing? What are you doing to enjoy yourself and to, immerse yourself in the Missoula experience?
I've been riding my bike.
Good.
I just got a gravel bike, and I've been investing in that. I've been to a couple spinning classes to get in shape.
Uh-huh. That's always good.
But one of my first weekends here, I tried for the first time. I went ice fishing.
Oh,
fun.
Did you really?
I did. So I tried climbing and cross-country skiing.
Have you gone to any national parks? Have you gone to Glacier or Yellowstone yet?
No, that's on my list.
Summer.
Cool.
Yeah.
You're going to come up to Flathead this summer, right?
Absolutely.
Yes, you definitely
have. You seen the lake yet?
I've seen it because I drove by when I was on my way to Whitefish to get my bike. So.
Right, so you know how big that lake
it's
is.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's a beautiful
lake. And Mallory
lake.
Hasn't taken you on any of your backcountry adventures?
No, not yet. I've been making Sarah work too hard.
Yeah. All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy.
Summer bike evenings or something.
Jacqueline.
So tell me what a typical day is like working at your, Sarah. Tell me when it begins, what do you do, how long does it last, how does a typical day?
It goes from...
coffee.
It starts with coffee for sure, but not every day it's not the same because I'm usually like working different stuff. Some days I'm like all day in front of the computer like sketching stuff and drafting patterns. Some days I'm all day behind the machine testing the patterns I was drafting the day before.
Right.
But it's sometimes Mallory and I, we have design meetings that we can be more creative, and that's fun too. But the daily life, it's, you never know. Sometimes
small
stuff
business
comes up and we have to just pivot to another thing. Like you're here sewing, but we just got an email that we got to stop and go check.
Right.
And chat about it. So.
And is that the same for you, Mallory? Is that your typical? There's no typical day. Every day
there's
is turning up.
Day. Sarah said for an interview a few weeks ago, that which I thought was so fitting, that it's never boring.
It's what? Never boring. You don't get bored. You don't have time to get bored. No. You're just like,
you're like, poof, the day is gone.
It's fast.
What do we do? So you've been growing your multi-million dollar business. Do you have the infrastructure now to – how big can you grow with the infrastructure you have?
We need more people for sure. The human resources side is a struggle and a challenge. Right. And we're self – I mean, I started with $100. So we don't have a wild amount of investment. We just have business profits to be able to work off of. So yeah, slow growth and building a team slowly and strategically. If we – well, we might be able to bring 100% of production in-house over the next year, I think would be our goal.
Yes.
But the focus really has been more on growing our supply chain strength and growing profits. So we've had so many losses from production contractors.
Right.
Instead of this year, our focus is profit growth and not revenue growth, really. But we do have the capacity to probably 5x what we're doing. We just also are going to need space.
Mallory, sure. Do
we
you
have
think
a year and a half left of our lease?
I was going to say, yeah, your space, you're already outgrowing it and you just got there. Do you feel like some of your best customers would want to be a part of the experience of working for you? Because there's something to be said for somebody who's so passionate about the product that they're buying to be involved with it, especially if they have the skills, right? Not just randos off the street who like your clothes.
We're not talking about Amway.
Right. We're not talking about Amway, but we are talking about people that have the right skill set.
We get a lot. We do get a fair amount of pitches, people reaching out who have seen the brand somewhere and want to work for us, but haven't really found that right alignment with someone who's
careful.
Really excited and the skills that we need. So
yeah.
And yes, not, I'm sure our customer base has those people in it, but we haven't.
And
sure.
You want them in Missoula. You really like yes. the part of that.
That's... We just made a big shift. We had a team member who was remote for almost 4 years, and we have made a big shift to no remote, which was a,
right.
a
good idea.
Decision. But yeah, no remote.
You know, and one of the things that you mentioned earlier about sort of the natural way in which your marketing and sales develop. You know, it's you never know when something is going to hit that's going to make an exponential change. And not that you plan for that, but eventually it happens one way or another. I may have shared a story with you a while back about I'm in China at that time with Senator Baucus, and we're on an elevator in Shanghai, and the door opens, and there's these two American-looking women in the elevator, and one of them says to the other woman, "Maybe they know. Maybe we can ask these guys." See, they had no idea who we were. And that was the opening line. I said, what might we know? Well, we're trying to find a manufacturer for our slippers. Maybe you know who we could talk to. So here are two women from Sausalito, California, who flew to China without any appointments or any leads to try to find a manufacturer. And the reason they did that is because in those days, this was a while back, Oprah Winfrey still had a TV show. And on one of her shows, she held up one of their slippers on the show and said, "Aren't these cute?" And the next day, they got 150,000 orders for these shoes.
And they
had no ability to respond to it whatsoever.
Or that's not an uncommon story. The person that goes and is pitching Walmart or pitching Costco and saying, and they say, "All right, I don't need 10,000. I need 100,000.
Right.
They can't accommodate
viral
it.
On TikTok now.
Right.
Right.
You know, and do you say no? Does if Bloomingdale's or Bergdorf Goodman or somebody comes along and the buyer says, "We'd like to have a couple of thousand of these." You have a decision to make, right? If you do you want to go in that direction? I mean, there's pros and cons to that sort of a thing.
Totally. Yeah, there absolutely is.
And the, being on, one of these TikTok sites isn't going to lead to, it may lead to 10,000 individuals wanting to buy, but it also may lead to 5 buyers for some group out there that really wants to start featuring your product at their shop, or even private labeling. And maybe Rag and Bone comes along and says, "This would be great fit with what we're doing.
Right.
Will you white label this for us?"
Totally. Yeah. I actually kind of ran into that situation earlier in the year with a viral TikTok. It was a kind of a call-out video I made about a really bad meeting I had with REI a few years ago. They flew me out and personally invited me to pitch, and it was just a disaster. And I made a TikTok video about it, and it went viral. And we had the dress I was wearing sold out in it. So that was
Right.
Cool. But then a ton of buyers reached out, and buyers from big companies. And
what'd they say?
Well, we ended up getting connected with a buyer at Moose Jaw. Ultimately, price point is too high for them. And then some buyers at Dress Barn were like, let's get you on the site immediately.
Yeah.
But it was a drop ship situation and it wasn't a good fit.
I want to add a related question to that, which is your experience with REI was a story where you were kind of warts and all. This is what happened. I find it refreshing, and I think I've told you this in the past. I like the fact that you don't varnish it. You don't clean anything up. Like, your storytelling is pretty – it's real. So it's warts and all. How come, right? I mean, why would you not kind of try to sanitize it a bit? I know the answer, but like, I think it's really important that you do that. When what was that? Was that intended? Like, was that purposeful?
I think it just like it takes effort to filter ourselves, right? And piece of content that we're out here ingesting is filtered. It's like social media is a highlight reel. There's in the ethical fashion and sustainable fashion space, there's greenwashing where people put this beautiful filter over things that are actually really terrible and prevent us from actually understanding what's going on with the things that we buy. And I don't really have time for that.
Well, that's the other thing is you hear this from a lot of musicians who make music, and they said, I never got into this to be a social media person.
Right.
I am creating music. You're kind of the same way. But
I've got 300 followers on my personal Instagram. I don't use social media personally.
But for your business, you do, and you've figured out a really important, you know, really valuable way of using it.
Well, so, you work for one of the guys, Lou Reed, who never sanitized anything.
Never sanitized anything and wouldn't know how to market things.
Right.
But that's the purity of a musician or a fashion designer or a creator, that they shouldn't have to worry about that stuff.
Have you had connections here in town? Have you talked with the folks at Biomimicry 3.8?
Yes, actually. I gave a TED Talk earlier this winter and was connected to them after the TED Talk. Had some really awesome.
There should be some synergy between what they're doing globally, you know, and what you're doing. And
totally.
You know,
what are they doing? What do they do?
They are one of the leading consultancies in the world. That offer a sort of biological intelligence and doing sustainability things and replacing artificial, you know, oil-based products with natural products. They do all sorts of stuff, and their network is incredible in terms of the companies that they are doing this kind of work for.
Yeah, it's like how to mimic natural processes in business and in like corporate structure.
Well, right. That
it's really fascinating.
Yeah, they're doing great stuff.
That begs a question. AI. Right? How does AI impact what you guys do? Right? Can it make it easier? Right? At some point to say, hey, ChatGPT.
I wrote a ChatGPT script for a really important business thing recently, and it was terrible, and I couldn't use it.
Oh, you couldn't?
No.
Well, you know, you could have an AI character wearing one of Mallory's dresses, and all of a sudden the dress goes viral because the AI character is wearing it.
But can't you use it for like? Can't you use it like? Hey, I need a design that incorporates these dimensions, using this fabric, and I need it to look like this. And will it spit out for you kind of a design plan? You know, this is I right now skeptical. Perhaps not.
Yeah.
But the thing is that businesses are really trying to understand how AI is going to impact, and maybe. In a couple, you know, in a year or so, it'll get you 90% of the way there by just spitting that information into that and getting something back. And then you just use that 10% to kind of refine it. That can happen.
Mm-hmm. Five easy.
What else? Any thoughts about AI? No.
I can't picture that.
Okay.
It overwhelms me.
It's overwhelming, but there, you know, at some point there probably will be some marketing implications using AI.
Well, definitely today,
for sure.
Even. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Our guests are Sarah and Mallory from Ewer here in Missoula, Montana. Back after this. We are back with Mallory and Sarah.
Mallory, Sarah. So tell me, if I'm a customer out there listening, what's coming up? You know, when's the new stuff coming out? When they can go online and find, you know, new product? How do they get online? What, you know, what's your web address? How do they find you? And what other kinds of activities are happening? You're hiring new people. Tell me what's going on now that we can share as we look forward.
Yeah. So you can always find us at shopyouer.com. It's like shopping, Y-O-U-E-R.com. And we drop product every month. So we have a different little capsule outfit that comes every month. And
what's a capsule outfit?
Oh, just stuff that fits together. Like merchandises together. Like yeah. We just dropped a bunch of skorts and a few different t-shirts and shorts, and you can mix and match all those pieces
cool.
together.
Good, good.
Yeah. And then coming up, I think something that we're really excited about is in October is going to be like all stuff that Sarah has designed exclusively. That's going to be our first drop.
Sarah's show. The Sarah show coming in October.
Yeah. We have four new pieces that we've never made before that Sarah's done.
What are
Fantastic.
They?
Fantastic.
Can we preview?
Preview. They can't see it yet, but they can just generally preview. What are they?
What types of products?
It would be a full body suit.
Full body suit?
Oh, cool. Yeah.
I could use
and
one
it's
of
so
them.
Comfortable. It's like I'm so excited.
It's so comfortable.
It was really fun to
Is it tight fitting, loose fitting?
Tight fitting.
So if somebody would use it.
Skin suit.
Wait, was somebody. Arnie, would someone use it for skiing or for winter activities or just any activity?
Active wear. Yeah.
It's active wear.
Oh, like, that's cool.
It's like leggings with a shirt attached to it.
Cool. That's cool. And so there's four pieces to that.
There's a bodysuit. There's a blazer.
Uh-huh.
Which is like athletic wear, but really.
A blazer?
A blazer.
So you could wear it to work if you were working in an office?
Yeah, it's good. Really versatile. You can
versatile.
Wear in different settings.
Yeah, active good. Wear.
And what
it's
else?
Two.
That's two.
The pants. A white pants? Leg pants. Oh, yes. I almost forgot the pants.
Yes.
The pants, I'm really excited about. I'm a white
Well, cool. We'll have to
person.
Look at that.
That's cool.
And what else?
And we have a crop top.
The crop
long
top.
Long sleeve crop top.
A long sleeve crop
oh,
top.
Oh, my wife loves the crop top.
She, that's cool.
It's
loves
really
the crop top.
She knows your buying history. And
she returns every crop top she buys.
She does?
Yes. This is actually a well-known thing about your wife.
I wonder what that has to do with. I'll investigate.
You'll investigate that. And then as you're growing, I know you're probably continually looking for good new people. And is that the case? And in what area would you be looking
generally
as you expand
speaking.
In general?
We're always looking for production sewers. Sarah and I spend a lot of time behind the machines just because we're learning about timing and we're trying to catch things up and keep things on track and – that's not super sustainable. And as we grow and get more equipment, we'll need more production sewers. So.
Right, that will come into the facility, right?
Yeah.
You're not doing this piecemeal at home.
Are there any, is the local universities or, you know, the Missoula College, do they have any trade programs that would help you? No, not yet.
Costume design department?
Okay.
That might be worth reaching out to. But I think one of the bigger challenges in that arena is that there's no apparel industry in Montana. So everything that we're going to have to train, we do train everybody that comes in.
Where's the nearest? Is it Seattle?
There's probably a little bit in Spokane, maybe. Yeah,
okay.
There is in Spokane, actually. There's a large factory in Spokane.
Okay.
Yeah. But that's the closest.
Huh.
So we're in a wasteland here, and you're the outpost.
And how can people
manufacturing
find,
outpost.
Right. You're in the last best manufacturing place. How can people find you? On social media, where are you social?
We prefer to hang out on Instagram and TikTok. You can find us at shopyouer, shopyouer on both.
Fantastic. And give us the website one more time.
Shopyouer.com.
Shopyouer.com.
Yeah,
what a good
to
place
remember.
To end it.
Yes.
This wonderful interview, our third time with you and first time with Sarah, but third time with Mallory.
Thanks for having
Pleasure
us.
To
Thanks
see
for
you.
Having us.
We're always,
really
we're always
nice
happy
meeting.
To get the updates and hear what's going on in your life.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations and good
from
luck.
You guys too.
Okay. All right, Arnie, I'll see you next Sunday.
Take care, Scott. See you next week.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.